was the Witchfinder Army's great failure. One of the early entries in the Nice and Accurate Prophecies concerned Agnes Nutter's own death. The English, by and large, being a crass and indolent race, were not as keen on burning women as other countries in Europe. In Germany, the bonfires were built and burned with regular Teutonic thoroughness. Even the pious Scots, locked throughout history in a long-drawn-out battle with their arch-enemies, the Scots, managed a few burnings to while away the long winter evenings. But the English never seemed to have the heart for it. One reason for this may have to do with the manner of Agnes Nutter's death, which more or less marked the end of the serious witch-hunting craze in England. A howling mob, reduced to utter fury by her habit of going around being intelligent and curing people, arrived at her house one April evening to find her sitting with her coat on, waiting for them.
"Ye're tardy," she said to them. "I should have been aflame 10 minutes since."
Then she got up and hobbled slowly through the suddenly silent crowd, out of the cottage, and to the bonfire that had been hastily thrown together on the village green. Legend says that she climbed awkwardly onto the pyre and thrust her arms around the stake behind her.
"Tie it well,"
she said to the astonished witchfinder. And then, as the villagers sidled toward the pyre, she raised her handsome head in the firelight and said,
"Gather ye right close, good people. Come close until the fire near scorch ye, for I charge ye that all must see how the last true witch in England dies. For which I am, for so I am judged, yet I know not what my true crime may be. And therefore, let mine death be a message to the world. Gather ye right close, I say, and mark well the fate of all who meddle with such as they do not understand."
And apparently she smiled, and looked up at the sky over the village, and added,
"That goes for you as well, you daft old fool."
And after that strange blasphemy, she said no more. She let them gag her, and stood imperiously as the torches were put to the dry wood. The crowd grew nearer, one or two of its members a little uncertain as to whether they'd done the right thing, now they came to think about it. 30 seconds later, an explosion took out the village green, scythed the valley clean of every living thing, and was seen as far away as Halifax. There was much subsequent debate as to whether this had been sent by God or by Satan, but a note later found in Agnes Nutter's cottage indicated that any divine or devilish intervention had been materially helped by the contents of Agnes's petticoats, wherein she had, with some foresight, concealed 80 pounds of gunpowder and 40 pounds of roofing nails. What Agnes also left behind, on the kitchen table, beside a note cancelling the milk, was a box and a book. There were specific instructions as to what should be done with the box, and equally specific instructions about what should be done with the book. It was to be sent to Agnes's son, John Device. The people who found it, who were from the next village and had been woken up by the explosion, considered ignoring the instructions and just burning the cottage, and then looked around at the twinkling fires and nail-studded wreckage and decided not to. Besides, Agnes's note included painfully precise predictions about what would happen to people who did not carry out her orders. The man who put the torch to Agnes Nutter was a witchfinder major. They found his hat in a tree 2 miles away. His name, stitched inside on a fairly large piece of tape, was "Thou Shalt Not Commit Adultery, Pulsifer," one of England's most assiduous witchfinders, and it might have afforded him some satisfaction to know that his last surviving descendant was now, even if unawares, heading toward Agnes Nutter's last surviving descendant. He might have felt that some ancient revenge was at last going to be discharged. If he'd known what was actually going to happen when that descendant met her, he would have turned in his grave, except that he had never got one. Firstly, however, Newt had to do something about the flying saucer. It landed in the road ahead of him just as he was trying to find the lower Tadfield turning and have the map spread over the steering wheel. He had to brake hard. It looked like every cartoon of a flying saucer Newt had ever seen. As he stared over the top of his map, a door in the saucer slid aside with a satisfying whoosh, revealing a gleaming walkway which extended automatically down to the road. Brilliant blue light shone out, outlining three alien shapes. They walked down the ramp. At least two of them walked. The one that looked like a pepper pot just skidded down it and fell over at the bottom. The other two ignored its frantic beeping and walked over to the car quite slowly, in the worldwide approved manner of policemen already compiling the charge sheet in their heads. The tallest one, a yellow toad dressed in kitchen foil, rapped on Newt's window. He wound it down. The thing was wearing the kind of mirror-finished sunglasses that Newt always thought of as Cool Hand Luke shades.
"Morning, sir, or madam, or Newt-er," the thing said. "This your planet, is it?"
The other alien, which was stubby and green, had wandered off into the woods by the side of the road. Out of the corner of his eye, Newt saw it kick a tree and then run a leaf through some complicated gadget on its belt. It didn't look very pleased.
"Well, yes, I suppose so," he said.
The toad stared thoughtfully at the skyline.
"Had it long, have we, sir?"
it said.
Not personally. I mean, as a species, about 500,000 years, I think.
The alien exchanged glances with its colleague.
"Been letting the old acid rain build up, haven't we, sir?"
it said.
"Been letting ourselves go a bit with the old hydrocarbons, perhaps?"
I'm sorry?
"Could you tell me your planet's albedo, sir?"
said the toad, still staring levelly at the horizon as though it was doing something interesting.
No.
"Well, I'm sorry to have to tell you, sir, that your polar ice caps are below regulation size for a planet of this category, sir."
"Oh, dear," said Newt. He was wondering who he could tell about this, and realizing that there was absolutely no one who would believe him. The toad bent closer. It seemed to be worried about something, insofar as Newt was any judge of the expressions of an alien race he'd never encountered before.
"We'll overlook it on this occasion, sir."
Newt gabbled. I'll see to it. When I say I mean I think Antarctica or something belongs to every country or something. And the fact is, sir, that we have been asked to give you a message." "Oh?"
"Message runs. We give you a message of universal peace and cosmic harmony and such like. Message ends," said the toad.
"Oh." Newt turned this over in his mind.
Well, that's very kind.
"Have you got any idea why we have been asked to bring you this message, sir?"
said the toad.
Newt brightened. I suppose," he flailed, "what with mankind's, harnessing of the atom, and
neither have we, sir."
The toad stood up.
"One of them phenomena, I expect. Well, we better be going,
It shook its head vaguely, turned around, and waddled back to the saucer without another word. Newt stuck his head out of the window.
"Thank you."
The small alien walked past the car.
"CO2 level up 0.5%,
it rasped, giving him a meaningful look.
"You do know you can find yourself charged with being a dominant species while under the influence of impulse-driven consumerism, don't you?"
The two of them righted the third alien, dragged it back up the ramp, and shut the door.
Newt waited for a while in case there were any spectacular light displays, but it just stood there. Eventually, he drove up on the verge and around it. When he looked in his rearview mirror, it had gone. I must be overdoing something, he thought guiltily. But what? And I can't even tell Shadwell, because he'd probably bore me out for not counting their nipples. Anyway, said Adam, you've got it all wrong about witches. The them were sitting on a field gate watching dog rolling in cowpats. The little mongrel seemed to be enjoying himself immensely.
I've been reading about them, he said in a slightly louder voice. Actually, they've been right all along, and it's wrong to persecute them with British Inquisitions and stuff.
My mother said they were just intelligent women protesting in the only way open to them against the stifling injustices of a male-dominated social hierarchy, said Pepper.
Pepper's mother lectured at Northern Polytechnic. Footnote, during the day. In the evenings, she gave power tarot readings to nervous executives, because old habits die hard.
Yes, but your mother's always saying things like that, said Adam, after a while.
Pepper nodded amiably.
And she said, at worst, they were just free-thinking worshippers of the progenerative principle.
Who's the progen-ratty principle?
Said Wensleydale.
Dunno, something to do with maypoles, I think, said Pepper, vaguely.
Well, I thought they worshipped the devil,
said Brian, but without automatic condemnation.
The them had an open mind on the whole subject of devil worship. The them had an open mind about everything.
Anyway, the devil'd be better than a stupid maypole.
Now, that's where you're wrong, said Adam.
It's not the devil. It's another god, or something.
With horns.
The devil, said Brian.
No, said Adam, patiently. People just got him mixed up. He's just got horns similar. He's called Pan. He's half a goat.
Which half?
Said Wensleydale. Adam thought about it.
The bottom half, he said, at length. Fancy you not knowing that. I should have thought everyone knew that.
Well, goats haven't got a bottom half, said Wensleydale. They've got a front half and a back half, just like cows.
They watched dogs some more, drumming their heels on the gate. It was too hot to think. Then Pepper said,
If he's got goat legs, he shouldn't have horns. They belong to the front half.
I didn't make him up, did I? Said Adam, aggrieved. I was just telling you. Well, it's news to me I made him up. No one need go on at me.
Anyway, said Pepper, this stupid pot can't go around complaining if people think he's the devil. Not with having horns on. People are bound to say, oh, here comes the devil.
Dog started to dig up a rabbit hole. Adam, who seemed to have a weight on his mind, took a deep breath.
You don't have to be so literal about everything, he said. That's the trouble these days. Grass materialism. It's people like you who go around chopping down rainforests and making holes in the ozone layer. There's a great big hole in the ozone layer 'cause of grass materialism people like you.
I can't do anything about it, said Brian, automatically. I'm still paying off on a stupid cucumber frame.
It's in the magazine, said Adam. It takes millions of acres of rainforest to make one beef burger, and all this ozone is leaking away because of,
He hesitated.
People spraying the environment.
And there's whales, said Wensleydale. We've got to save 'em.
Adam looked blank. His plunder of New Aquarian's back issues hadn't included anything about whales. Its editors had assumed that the readers were all for saving whales, in the same way they assumed that those readers breathed and walked upright.
Yeah, there was this program about them, explained Wensleydale.
What we got to save them for, said Adam.
He had confused visions of saving up whales until you had enough for a badge. Wensleydale paused and racked his memory.
Because they can sing, and they got big brains. There's hardly any of them left, and we don't need to kill them anyway, 'cause they only make pet food and stuff.
If they're so clever, said Brian, slowly,
what are they doing in the sea?
Oh, I don't know, said Adam, looking thoughtful. Swimming around all day, just opening their mouths and eating stuff? Sounds pretty clever to me.
A squeal of brakes and a long-drawn-out crunch interrupted him. They scrambled off the gate and ran up the lane to the crossroads, where a small car lay on its roof at the end of a long skid mark. A little further down the road was a hole. It looked as though the car had tried to avoid it. As they looked at it, a small, oriental-looking head darted out of sight. The them dragged the door open and pulled out the unconscious Newt. Visions of medals for heroic rescue thronged Adam's head. Practical considerations of first aid thronged around that of Wensleydale.
"We shouldn't move him," he said. "Because of broken bones, we ought to get someone."
Adam cast around. There was a rooftop just visible in the trees down the road. It was Jasmine Cottage. And in Jasmine Cottage, Anathema Device was sitting in front of a table on which some bandages, aspirins, and assorted first aid items had been laid out for the past hour. Anathema had been looking at the clock. "He'll be coming around any moment now," she'd thought. And then, when he got there, he wasn't what she'd been expecting. More precisely, he wasn't what she'd been hoping for. She had been hoping, rather self-consciously, for someone tall, dark, and handsome. Newt was tall, but with a rolled-out, thin look. And while his hair was undoubtedly dark, it wasn't any sort of fashion accessory. It was just a lot of thin black strands, all growing together out of the top of his head. This was not Newt's fault. In his younger days, he would go every couple of months to the barber's shop on the corner, clutching a photograph he'd carefully torn from a magazine, which showed someone with an impressively cool haircut grinning at the camera. And he would show the picture to the barber and ask to be made to look like that, please. And the barber, who knew his job, would take one look and then give Newt the basic all-purpose short back and sides. After a year of this, Newt realized that he obviously didn't have the face that went with haircuts. The best Newt and Pulsifer could hope for, after a haircut, was shorter hair. It was the same with suits. The clothing hadn't been invented that would make him look suave and sophisticated and comfortable. These days he had learned to be satisfied with anything that would keep the rain off and give him somewhere to keep his change. And he wasn't handsome, not even when he took off his glasses. Footnote. Actually, less so when he took off his glasses, because then he tripped over things and wore bandages a lot. And, she discovered when she took off his shoes to lay him on her bed, he wore odd socks. One blue one with a hole in the heel, and one grey one with holes around the toes. "I suppose I'm meant to feel a wave of warm, tender female something or other about this," she thought. "I just wish he'd wash them." So, tall, dark, but not handsome. She shrugged. Okay, 2 out of 3 isn't bad. The figure on the bed began to stir, and Anathema, who in the very nature of things always looked to the future, suppressed her disappointment and said, "How are we feeling now?" Newt opened his eyes. He was lying in a bedroom, and it wasn't his. He knew this instantly because of the ceiling. His bedroom ceiling still had the model aircraft hanging from bits of cotton. He'd never got around to taking them down. This ceiling just had cracked plaster. Newt had never been in a woman's bedroom before, but he sensed that this was one largely by a combination of soft smells. There was a hint of talcum and lily of the valley, and no rank suggestion of old T-shirts that had forgotten what the inside of a tumble dryer looked like. He tried to lift his head up, groaned, and let it sink back onto the pillow. Pink, he couldn't help noticing. "You banged your head on the steering wheel," said the voice that had roused him. "Nothing broken, though. What happened?" Newt opened his eyes again. "Car all right?" he said. "Apparently. A little voice inside it keeps repeating, 'Prease to frosten sleet butt.'" "See," said Newt, to an invisible audience. "They knew how to build them in those days. That plastic finish hardly takes a dent." He blinked at Anathema. "I swerved to avoid a Tibetan in the road," he said. "At least,
I think I did. I think I've probably gone mad. The figure walked around into his line of sight. It had dark hair and red lips and green eyes, and it was almost certainly female. Newt tried not to stare. It said, "If you have, no one's going to notice." Then she smiled. "Do you know, I've never met a witchfinder before." Newt began. She held up his open wallet. "I had to look inside," she said. Newt felt extremely embarrassed, a not unusual state of affairs. Shadwell had given him an official witchfinder's warrant card, which, among other things, charged all beadles, magistrates, bishops, and bailiffs to give him free passage and as much dry kindling as he required. It was incredibly impressive, a masterpiece of calligraphy, and probably quite old. He'd forgotten about it. "It's really just a hobby," he said wretchedly. "I'm really, He wasn't going to say wages clerk. Not here, not now, not to a girl like this. A computer engineer," he lied. "Want to be? Want to be? In my heart I'm a computer engineer. It's only the brain that's letting me down. Excuse me, could I know, anathema device?" said Anathema. "I'm an occultist, but that's just a hobby. I'm really a witch." "Well done. You're half an hour late," she added, handing him a small sheet of cardboard. "So you'd better read this. It'll save a lot of time." Newt did, in fact, own a small home computer, despite his boyhood experiences. In fact, he'd owned several. You always knew which ones he owned. They were desktop equivalents of the Wasabi. They were the ones which, for example, dropped to half price just after he'd bought them, or were launched in a blaze of publicity and disappeared into obscurity within a year, or only worked at all if you stuck them in a fridge, or if by some fluke they were basically good machines. Newt always got the few that were sold with the early bug-infested version of the operating system. But he persevered because he believed. Adam also had a small computer. He used it for playing games, but never for very long. He'd load a game, watch it intently for a few minutes, and then proceed to play it until the high score counter ran out of zeros. When the other them wondered about this strange skill, Adam professed mild amazement that everyone didn't play games like this. "All you have to do is learn how to play it, and then it's just easy," he said. Quite a lot of the front parlour in Jasmine Cottage was taken up, Newt noticed with a sinking feeling, with piles of newspapers. Clippings were stuck around the walls. Some of them had bits circled in red ink. He was mildly gratified to spot several he had cut out for Shadwell. Anathema owned very little in the way of furniture. The only thing she'd bothered to bring with her had been her clock, one of the family heirlooms. It wasn't a full-cased grandfather clock, but a wall clock with a free-swinging pendulum that E.A. Poe would cheerfully have strapped someone under. Newt kept finding his eye drawn to it. "It was built by an ancestor of mine," said Anathema, putting the coffee cups down on the table. "Sir Joshua Device. You may have heard of him. He invented the little rocking thing that made it possible to build accurate clocks cheaply. They named it after him."
"The Joshua?" said Newt, guardedly.
"The device." In the last half hour, Newt had heard some pretty unbelievable stuff, and was close to believing it, but you had to draw the line somewhere. "The device is named after a real person," he said. "Oh, yes, fine old Lancashire name. From the French, I believe. You'll be telling me next you've never heard of Sir Humphrey Gadget. Oh, now, come on. Who devised a gadget that made it possible to pump out flooded mineshafts? Or Pietro Gizmo? Or Cyrus T. Doodad, America's foremost black inventor? Thomas Edison said that the only other contemporary practical scientists he admired were Cyrus T. Doodad and Ella Reader Widget. And..." She looked at Newt's blank expression. "I did my PhD on them," she said. "The people who invented things so simple and universally useful that everyone forgot they'd ever actually needed to be invented. Sugar?"
You normally have two,
said Anathema sweetly. Newt stared back at the card she'd handed him. She'd seemed to think it would explain everything. It didn't. It had a ruled line down the middle. On the left-hand side was a short piece of what seemed to be poetry in black ink. On the right-hand side, in red ink this time, were comments and annotations. The effect was as follows. 3819. When Orient's chariot inverted be, four wheels in the sky, a man with bruises be upon your bed, aching his head for willow fine. A man who testeth with a pin, yet his heart be clean, yet seed of mine own undoing. Take the means of flame from him, for to make right certain, together ye shall be until the end that is to come. And the notes. Japanese car, upturned. Car smash, not serious injury. Take in. Willow fine equals aspirin. CF3757. Pin equals witchfinder, CF102. Good witchfinder refers to pulsifer, CF002. Search for matches, etc. In the 1990s. Less than a day. CF712-3803-4004. Newt's hand went automatically to his pocket. His cigarette lighter had gone.
What's this mean?
He said, hoarsely.
Have you ever heard of Agnes Nutter? Said Anathema.
No, said Newt, taking a desperate defence in sarcasm.
You're going to tell me she invented mad people, I suppose.
Another fine old Lancashire name,
said Anathema coldly. If you don't believe, read up on the witch trials of the early 17th century.
She was an ancestress of mine. As a matter of fact, one of your ancestors burned her alive, or tried to.
Newt listened in fascinated horror to the story of Agnes Nutter's death.
Thou shalt not commit adultery, Pulsifer, he said when she'd finished.
Oh, that sort of name was quite common in those days, said Anathema. Apparently, there were 10 children, and they were a very religious family. There was covetousness, Pulsifer, false witness, Pulsifer.
I think I understand, said Newt.
Gosh, I thought Shadwell said he'd heard the name before. It must be in the army records.
I suppose if I'd gone around being called adultery, Pulsifer, I'd want to hurt as many people as possible.
I think he just didn't like women very much.
Oh, well, thanks for taking it so well, said Newt.
I mean, he must have been an ancestor. There aren't many Pulsifers. Maybe that's why I sort of met up with the Witchfinder army. Could be fate, he said, hopefully.
She shook her head.
No, she said. No such thing.
Anyway, witchfinding isn't like it was in those days. I don't even think old Shadwell's ever done more than kick over Doris Stokes's dustbins.
Between you and me, Agnes was a bit of a difficult character, said Anathema, vaguely. She had no middle gears.
Newt waved the bit of paper.
But what's it got to do with this? He said.
She wrote it. Well, the original. It's number 3819 of the Nice and Accurate Prophecies of Agnes Nutter, first published 1655.
Newt stared at the prophecy again. His mouth opened and shut.
She knew I'd crash my car, he said.
Yes. Well, no, probably not. It's hard to say. You see, Agnes was the worst prophet that's ever existed, because she was always right. That's why the book never sold.
Most psychic abilities are caused by a simple lack of temporal focus, and the mind of Agnes Nutter was so far adrift in time that she was considered pretty mad even by the standards of 17th century Lancashire, where mad prophetesses were a growth industry. But she was a treat to listen to, everyone agreed. She used to go on about curing illnesses by using a sort of mould, and the importance of washing your hands so that the tiny little animals who caused diseases would be washed away, when every sensible person knew that a good stink was the only defence against the demons of ill health. She advocated running at a sort of gentle bouncing trot as an aid to living longer, which was extremely suspicious and first put the witchfinders on to her, and stressed the importance of fibre in diet, although here she was clearly ahead of her time, since most people were less bothered about the fibre in their diet than the gravel. And she wouldn't cure warts.
"It is all in your mind," she'd say. "Forget about it, and it will go away."
It was obvious that Agnes had a line to the future, but it was an unusually narrow and specific line. In other words, almost totally useless.
How do you mean? Said Newt.
She managed to come up with the kind of predictions that you can only understand after the thing has happened, said Anathema. Like, do not buy a Betamax. That was a prediction for 1972.
Well, you mean she predicted videotape recorders?
No, she just picked up one little fragment of information, said Anathema. That's the point. Most of the time she comes up with such an oblique reference that you can't work it out until it's gone past. And then it all slots into place. And she didn't know what was going to be important or not, so it's all a bit hit and miss. Her prediction for November the 22nd, 1963, was about a house falling down in King's Lynn.
Oh?
Newt looked politely blank. President Kennedy was assassinated, said Anathema, helpfully. But Dallas didn't exist then, you see, whereas King's Lynn was quite important.
Oh.
She was generally very good if her descendants were involved.
Oh?
And she wouldn't know anything about the internal combustion engine. To her, they were just funny chariots. Even my mother thought it referred to an emperor's carriage overturning. You see, it's not enough to know what the future is. You have to know what it means. See, Agnes was like someone looking at a huge picture down a tiny little tube. She wrote down what seemed like good advice based on what she understood of the tiny little glimpses. Sometimes you can be lucky, Anathema went on. My great-grandfather worked out about the stock market crash of 1929, for example, 2 days before it actually happened. Made a fortune. You could say we're professional descendants. She looked sharply at Newt. You see, what no one ever realized until about 200 years ago is that the nice and accurate prophecies was Agnes's idea of a family heirloom. Many of the prophecies relate to her descendants and their well-being. She was sort of trying to look after us after she'd gone. That's the reason for the King's Lynn prophecy, we think. My father was visiting there at the time, so from Agnes's point of view, while he was unlikely to be struck by stray rounds from Dallas, there was a good chance he might be hit by a brick.
Oh, what a nice person, said Newt.
You could almost overlook her blowing up an entire village. Anathema ignored this. Anyway, that's about it, she said. Ever since then, we've made it our job to interpret them. After all, it averages out at about one prophecy a month. More now, in fact, as we get closer to the end of the world.
And when is that going to be? Said Newt.
Anathema looked meaningfully at the clock. He gave a horrible little laugh that he hoped sounded suave and worldly. After the event so far today, he wasn't feeling very sane, and he could smell Anathema's perfume, which made him uncomfortable.
Think yourself lucky I don't need a stopwatch, said Anathema. We've got, about 5 or 6 hours.
Newt turned this over in his mind. Thus far in his life, he'd never had the urge to drink alcohol, but something told him there had to be a first time.
Do witches keep drink in the house? He ventured.
Oh, yes. She smiled the sort of smile Agnes Nutter probably smiled when unpacking the contents of her lingerie drawer. Green bubbly stuff with strange things squirming on the congealing surface. You should know that.
Fine. Got any ice?
It turned out to be gin. There was ice. Anathema, who had picked up witchcraft as she went along, disapproved of liquor in general, but approved of it in her specific case.
"Did I tell you about the Tibetan coming out of a hole in the road?"
Newt said, relaxing a bit.
"Oh, I know about them," she said,
shuffling the papers on the table.
"The two of them came out of the front lawn yesterday. The poor things were quite bewildered, so I gave them a cup of tea, and then they borrowed a spade and went down again. I don't think they quite know what they're supposed to be doing."
Newt felt slightly aggrieved.
"Well, how did you know they were Tibetan?" he said.
"If it comes to that, how did you know?
Did he go, om, when you hit him?"
"Well, he looked a Tibetan," said Newt.
"Saffron robes, bald head, you know, Tibetan. One of mine spoke quite good English. It seems that one minute he was repairing radios in Lhasa, next minute he was in a tunnel. He doesn't know how he's going to get home."
"Though if you sent him up the road, he could probably have got a lift on a flying saucer," said Newt gloomily.
"Three aliens, one of them a little tin robot."
"Oh, they landed on your lawn too, did they?"
"It's about the only place they didn't land, according to the radio. They keep coming down all over the world, delivering a short, trite message of cosmic peace. And when people say, yes, well, they give them a blank look and take off again. Signs and portents, just like Agnes said."
"You're going to tell me she predicted all this too, I suppose?" Anathema leafed through a battered card index in front of her.
"I kept meaning to put it all on computer," she said. "Word searches and so forth. You know, it'd make it a lot simpler. The prophecies are arranged in any old order, but there are clues, handwriting, and so."
"She did it all in a card index," said Newt.
"No, a book. But I've, mislaid it. We've always had copies, of course."
"Lost it, eh?" said Newt, trying to inject some humour into the proceedings.
"I bet she didn't foresee that."
Anathema glowered at him. If looks could kill, Newt would have been on a slab. Then she went on. "We've built up quite a concordance over the years, though, and my grandfather came up with a useful cross-referencing system. Here we are." She pushed a sheet of paper in front of Newt. 3988. "When men of Crocus come from the earth, and green man from the sky, yet cannot why, and Pluto's bars quit the lightning castles, and sunken lands riseth, and Leviathan runneth free, and Brazil is vert, then three cometh together, and four arise upon iron horses ride. I tell you, the end draweth nigh." And he looked at the notes. Crocus equals saffron. CF 2003. Aliens? Paratroops? Nuclear power stations. See cuttings numbers 798 to 806. Atlantis cuttings 812 to 819. Leviathan equals whale, CF 1981. South America is green. 3 equals 4. Railways, iron road, CF 2675.
"I didn't get all of this one in advance," Anathema admitted. "I filled it in after listening to the news." "You must be incredibly good at crosswords in your family," said Newt. "I think Agnes is getting a bit out of her depth here anyway. The bits about Leviathan and South America and threes and fours could mean anything."
She sighed.
"The problem is newspapers. You never know if Agnes is referring to some tiny little incident that you might miss. Do you know how long it takes to go through every daily paper thoroughly every morning?"
3 hours and 10 minutes, said Newt automatically.
"I expect we'll get a medal or something," said Adam, optimistically. "Rescuing a man from a blazing wreck."
"It wasn't blazing," said Pepper. "It wasn't even very wrecked when we put it back right side up."
Well, it could have been, Adam pointed out. I don't see why we shouldn't have a medal just because some old car doesn't know when to catch fire. They stood looking down at the hole. Anathema had called the police, who had put it down to subsidence and put some cones around it. It was dark and went down a long way.
Could be good fun going to Tibet, said Brian. We could learn martial arts and stuff. I saw this old film where there's this valley in Tibet, and everyone there lives for hundreds of years. It's called Shangri-La. My aunt's bungalow's called Shangri-La, said Wensleydale.
Adam snorted. Not very clever, naming a valley after some old bungalow, he said. Might as well call it Dunromin, or The Laurels.
It's a lot better than Shambles, anyway, said Wensleydale mildly.
Shambhala, corrected Adam.
I expect it's the same place. Probably got both names, said Pepper, with unusual diplomacy. Like our house. We changed the name from The Lodge to Norton View when we moved in, but we still get letters addressed to Theo C. Coupier, The Lodge. Perhaps they've named it Shambhala now, but people still call it The Laurels.
Adam flicked a pebble into the hole. He was becoming bored with Tibetans.
What should we do now? Said Pepper. They're dipping sheep over at Norton Bottom Farm. We could go and help.
Adam threw a larger stone into the hole and waited for the thump. It didn't come.
Dunno, he said distantly. I reckon we should do something about whales and forests and such like.
Like what? Said Brian, who enjoyed the diversions available at a good sheep dipping. He began to empty his pockets of crisp packets and drop them one by one into the hole.
We could go into Tavfield this afternoon and not have a hamburger, said Pepper. If all four of us don't have one, that's millions of acres of rainforest they won't have to cut down.
Oh, they'll be cutting them down anyway, said Wensleydale.
It's grass materialism again, said Adam. Same with the whales. It's amazing the stuff that's going on.
He stared at Dog. He was feeling very odd. The little mongrel, noticing the attention, balanced expectantly on its hind legs.
It's people like you that's eaten all the whales, said Adam, severely. I bet you've used up nearly a whole whale already.
Dog, one last tiny satanic spark of his soul hating himself for it, put his head on one side and whined.
It's going to be a fine old world to grow up in, Adam said. No whales, no air, and everyone paddling around because of the seas rising.
Then the Atlanticans would be the only ones well off, said Pepper, cheerfully.
Huh, said Adam, not really listening. Something was happening inside his head. It was aching. Thoughts were arriving there without him having to think them. Something was saying, you can do something, Adam Young. You can make it all better. You can do anything you want. And what was saying this to him was him. Part of him, deep down. Part of him that had been attached to him all these years and not really noticed. Like a shadow. It was saying, yes, it's a rotten world. It could have been great, but now it's rotten. And it's time to do something about it. That's what you're here for. To make it all better.
Because they'd be able to go everywhere, Pepper went on, giving him a worried look. The Atlanticans, I mean. Because...
I'm fed up with the old Atlanticans and Tibetans, snapped Adam.
They stared at him. They'd never seen him like this before.
It's all very well for them, said Adam. Everyone's going around using up all the whales and coal and oil and ozone and rainforests and that, and there'll be none left for us. We should be going to Mars and stuff, instead of sitting around in the dark and wet with the air spilling away.
This wasn't the old Adam the them knew. The them avoided one another's faces. With Adam in this mood, the world seemed a chillier place.
Seems to me, said Brian pragmatically, seems to me... The best thing you could do about it is stop reading about it.
It's like you said the other day, said Adam. You grow up reading about pirates and cowboys and spacemen and stuff,
And just when you think the world's all full of amazing things, they tell you it's really all dead whales and chopped down forests and nuclear waste hanging about for millions of years. It's not worth growing up for, if you ask my opinion.
The them exchanged glances. There was a shadow over the whole world. Storm clouds were building up in the north, the sunlight glowing yellow off them, as though the sky had been painted by an enthusiastic amateur.
Seems to me it ought to be rolled up and started all over again, said Adam.
That hadn't sounded like Adam's voice. A bitter wind blew through the summer woods. Adam looked at Dog, who tried to stand on his head. There was a distant mutter of thunder. He reached down and patted the dog absent-mindedly.
Serve everyone right if all the nuclear bombs went off and it all started again. Only properly organized, said Adam. Sometimes I think that's what I'd like to happen. And then we could sort everything out.
The thunder growled again. Pepper shivered. This wasn't the normal them-Mobius bickering which passed many a slow hour. There was a look in Adam's eye that his friend couldn't quite fathom. Not devilment, because that was more or less there all the time, but a sort of blank greyness that was far worse.
Well, I don't know about we, Pepper tried. Don't know about the we, because if there's all these bombs going off, we all get blown up. Speaking as a mother of unborn generations, I'm against it.
They looked at her curiously. She shrugged.
And then giant ants take over the world, said Wensleydale nervously. I saw this film. Or you go around with sawn-off shotguns and everyone's got these cars with, you know, knives and guns stuck on.
I wouldn't allow any giant ants or anything like that, said Adam, brightening up horribly. And you'd all be all right. I'd see to that. It'd be wicked, eh, to have all the world to ourselves. Wouldn't it? We could share it out. We could have amazing games. We could have war with real armies and stuff.
But there wouldn't be any people, said Pepper.
Oh, I could make us some people, said Adam, airily. Good enough for armies, at any rate. We'd all have a quarter of the world each. Like you. He pointed to Pepper, who recoiled as though Adam's finger were a white-hot poker. Could have Russia, because it's red, and you've got red hair, right? And Wensley can have America, and Brian can have Africa and Europe, and...
Even in their state of mounting terror, the them gave this the consideration it deserved.
Stuttered Pepper as the rising wind whipped at her T-shirt. I don't see why Wensley's got America and all I've got is just Russia. Russia's boring.
Well, you can have China and Japan and India, said Adam.
Well, that means I've got just Africa and a lot of just boring little countries, said Brian,
negotiating even on the curl of the catastrophe curve.
I wouldn't mind Australia, he added.
Pepper nudged him and shook her head urgently.
Dog's gonna have Australia, said Adam,
his eyes glowing with the fires of creation.
On account of him needing a lot of space to run about. And there's all those rabbits and kangaroos for him to chase, and...
The clouds spread forwards and sideways, like ink poured into a bowl of clear water, moving across the sky faster than the wind.
But there won't be any rabbits!
Wensleydale shrieked. Adam wasn't listening, at least to any voices outside his own head.
It's all too much of a mess, he said. We should start again. Just save the ones we want and start again. That's the best way. It'll be doing the earth a favor when you come to think about it. It makes me angry, seeing the way those old loonies are messing it up.
It's memory, you see, said Anathema. It works backwards as well as forwards. Racial memory, I mean.
Newt gave her a polite but blank look.
What I'm trying to say, she said patiently, is that Agnes didn't see the future. That's just a metaphor. She remembered it. Not very well, of course,
and by the time it had been filtered through her own understanding, it's often a bit confused. We think she's best at remembering things that were going to happen to her descendants.
But if you're going to places and doing things because of what she wrote, and what she wrote is her recollection of the places you went to and the things you did, said Newt, then I know. But there's some evidence that that's how it works, said Anathema. They looked at the map spread out between them. Beside them, the radio murmured. Newt was very aware that a woman was sitting next to him. Be professional, he told himself. You're a soldier, aren't you? Well, practically. Then act like a soldier. He thought hard for a fraction of a second. Well, act like a respectable soldier on his best behaviour, then. He forced his attention back to the matter at hand. Why Lower Tadfield? Said Newt. I just got interested because of the weather. Optimal microclimate, they call it. That means it's a small place with its own personal nice weather. He glanced at her notebooks. There was definitely something odd about the place, even if you ignored Tibetans and UFOs, which seemed to be infesting the whole world these days. The Tadfield area didn't only have the kind of weather you could set your calendar by, it was also remarkably resistant to change. No one seemed to build new houses there. The population didn't seem to move much. There seemed to be more woods and hedges than you'd normally expect these days. The only battery farm to open in the area had failed after a year or two, and had been replaced by an old-fashioned pig farmer who let his pigs run loose in his apple orchards and sold the pork at premium prices. The two local schools seemed to soldier on in blissful immunity from the changing fashions of education. A motorway, which should have turned most of Lower Tadfield into little more than the Junction 18 Happy Porker rest area, changed course 5 miles away, detoured in a great semicircle, and continued on its way, oblivious to the little island of rural changelessness it had avoided. No one quite seemed to know why. One of the surveyors involved had a nervous breakdown. A second had become a monk, and a third had gone off to Bali to paint nude women. It was as if a large part of the 20th century had marked a few square miles out of bounds. Anathema pulled another card out of her index and flicked it across the table. 2315. Some say it cometh in London town or New York, but they be wrong, for the place is Tadersfield. Strong in his power he cometh like a knight in the fief. He divideth the world into 4 parts. He bringeth the storm. And then the notes. 4 years early, New Amsterdam till 1664, Tadville, Norfolk, Tadersfield, Devon, Tadfield, Oxon. See Revelation, chapter 6. Verse 10.
I had to go and look through a lot of county records, said Anathema.
Why is this one 2315? It's earlier than the others.
Well, Agnes was a bit slapdash about timing. I don't think she always knew what went where. I told you we spent ages devising a sort of system for chaining them together.
Newt looked at a few cards. For example, 1111. And the great hound shall come, and the two powers shall watch in vain. For it goeth where is its master, where they wot not, and he shall name it, true to its nature, and hell shall flee it.
Notes. Is this something to do with Bismarck? AF device, June 8, 1888. Schleswig-Holstein?
She's being unusually obtuse for Agnes, said Anathema.
3017. I see 4 riding, bringing the end, and the angels of hell ride with them, and 3 shall rise, and 4 together be 4, and the dark angel shall own defeat, yet the man shall claim his own.
Notes. The apocalyptic horseman. The man equals Pan the Devil, The Witch Trials of Lancashire, Brewster, 1782.
Another note. I feel good Agnes had drunk well this night. Quincy Device, October 15, 1789. Another. I concur. We are all human, alas. Miss O.J. Device, January 5, 1854. Why nice and accurate? Said Newt. Nice as in exact or precise, said Anathema, in the weary tones of one who'd explained this before. That's what it used to mean. But look, said Newt. He'd nearly convinced himself about the non-existence of the UFO, which was clearly a figment of his imagination. And the Tibetan could have been a... Well, he was working on it, but whatever it wasn't a Tibetan. But what he was more and more convinced of was that he was in a room with a very attractive woman who appeared actually to like him, or at least not to dislike him, which was a definite first for Newt. And admittedly, there seemed to be a lot of strange stuff going on, but if he really tried poling the boat of common sense upstream against the raging current of the evidence, he could pretend it was all, well, weather balloons or Venus or mass hallucination. In short, whatever Newt was now thinking with, it wasn't his brain. But look, he said, the world isn't really going to end now, is it? I mean, just look around. It's not like there's any international tension. Well, any more than there normally is. Why don't we leave this stuff for a while and just go and, oh, I don't know, maybe we could just go for a walk or something. I mean, don't you understand? There's something here, something that affects the area, she said. It's twisted all the ley lines. It's protecting the area against anything that might change it. It's... There it was again, the thought in her mind that she could not, was not allowed to grasp, like a dream upon waking. The windows rattled. Outside, a sprig of jasmine, driven by the wind, started to bang insistently on the glass. But I can't get a fix on it, said Anathema, twisting her fingers together. I've tried everything. Fix, said Newt. I've tried the pendulum. I've tried the theodolite. I'm psychic, you see. But it seems to move around. Newt was still in control of his own mind enough to do the proper translation. When most people said, I'm psychic, you see, they meant, I have an overactive but unoriginal imagination where black nail varnish talked to my budgie. When Anathema said it, it sounded as though she was admitting to a hereditary disease which she'd much prefer not to have. Armageddon moves around, said Newt. Various prophecies say the Antichrist has to arise first, said Anathema. Agnes says, he. I can't spot him. Or her, said Newt. What? Well, it could be a her, said Newt. This is the 20th century, after all. Equal opportunities. I don't think you're taking this entirely seriously, she said severely. Anyway, there isn't any evil here. That's what I don't understand. There's just love. Sorry, said Newt. She gave him a helpless look. It's hard to describe it, she said. Something or someone loves this place, loves every inch of it so powerfully that it shields and protects it. A deep-down, huge, fierce love. How can anything bad start here? How can the end of the world start in a place like this? This is the kind of town you'd want to raise your kids in. It's a kid's paradise. She smiled weakly. You should see the local kids. They're unreal. Right out of the boy's own paper. All scabby knees and brilliant and bull's eyes. She nearly had it. She could feel the shape of the thought. She was gaining on it. What's this place? Said Newt. What? Anathema screamed as her train of thought was derailed. Newt's finger tapped at the map. Disused aerodrome, it says. Just here, look, west of Tadfield itself. Anathema snorted. Disused? Don't you believe it? Used to be a wartime fighter base.
It's been up at Tadfield Air Base for about 10 years or so. And before you say it, the answer's no. I hate everything about the bloody place, but the Colonel's saner than you are by a long way. His wife does yoga, for God's sake. Now, what was it she said before? The kids round here? She felt her mental feet slipping away from under her, and she fell back into the more personal thought waiting.